The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. We are going back to Australia. In fact, we're going back to Molly Duker Winery with the owner, Sarah Marquis. Sarah, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
My absolute pleasure and great to meet you.
I'm thrilled to have you on. I interviewed your son about 6 months or so ago. And when the interview finished, my first thought beyond just the energy and the passion that this guy has is incredible. But I was like, I need to interview your mom, Luke. I need to interview Sarah because I found your story really just fascinating and impressive. So I appreciate you doing the pod today.
My pleasure. Like I said, fire away.
Well, let's just start with the obvious one. What do people need to know about your winery? What do they need to know about Molly Duker?
I think people need to know that it's a wine with purpose. Now, when I say purpose, it's that one of our trademarks is that we want to make a difference in the wine industry from the very start. And it's our journey to where we've got now hasn't been by accident. There's been real purpose between everything that we've done. So from the very start, we created a viticultural technique in the vineyards that has revolutionized the taste of our wine. So when I say we want to make a difference, our wine consumers, people that drink our wine, they just think, wow, it's so different from the rest. So we'll make a difference for consumers drinking our wine. I also like to make a difference with the team that I have. I want to impact their life and also make a difference because when the wine is with purpose, is that a big heart of mine and Molly Duker, behind all of Molly Duker is our charity work. You know, every day I get up not to make money, but to make a difference in people's lives. And I think when people drink the wine, they just think it's great. But when they find the story behind it, that's what impresses them the most.
There's a bunch of charities that we'll get into that you've talked about, Transport Cambodia, Mercy Multiplied, the Hutt Saint Center in Adelaide. But yes, Let's go back to the wine side to this. Sure. What do you mean by purpose? And what is the difference, the viticulture, the vinification? What are the things that makes your wine different?
When I was at university, I remember tasting my first wine, and it was a French wine. I can't remember the name of it. However, this wine was just beautiful. I was like, if I can make a wine like that, so I'm very driven and I want to make the best wine in the world. So I was like, I really want to make a wine like that. How is it made? So I went to lecturers at the time and said, how's it done? And they said, well, really, the premium wines that they found, remember, they're only lecturers, they actually don't make the wine, but they said it comes from dry-grown, low-yielding old vines. And we said, okay, that's true, because if you think about the premium wines in the world, it's usually that's associated. They have to have old vineyards, all that stuff. But at the time, that was when I met was my boyfriend at the time, came my future husband and the co-founder of Molly Duker. His name was Sparky. And we're both really entrepreneurs at heart. And we're like, well, let's do a thesis on the effect of canopy management on color and flavor. Because we knew that as winemakers, we just wanted to have wines with flavor, not structure. So we then did a thesis and we worked out that we could trick the grapevine into thinking it was dry grown, low yielding and old vines. And what happened is we produced, you know, with young vines, incredible wines. And today we still use this viticultural program and it just gives this luscious generosity. And when people drink our wine, they can taste the passion. Okay. So we created this unique technique that creates the wines with such beautiful texture, silky tannins. It's what we do on every wine that we make. We won't make any wine without this viticultural technique. That's what is our difference, because I truly believe wines are made in the vineyard. You know, if we don't look after our fruit, we're not going to make a great wine. So that's been the secret to our success and why people love the wines.
Okay, what's fascinating about this is you and every other great winery, one thing you share in common is the focus is on having the best environment for the highest quality grape grown. That is pretty standard. But usually the winemaker says, my job is to ignore nature, just to leave it alone, and I'm a steward for the land. While your technique is much more hands-on, much more proactive. I got to say, Sarah, this is the first time I've heard an answer like this. And you know what? I got to tell you, I'm intrigued.
Yeah. Well, that's true. See, we leave nothing to chance, and you can't. So we our mission statement is we make wines that make people go well through attention to detail and commitment to excellence. So by leaving nothing to chance, we control the grape growing 100%. We have vineyard inspectors. We have a team of five. And obviously, as we build more vineyards, we need more inspectors. But they're in the vineyards in the growing season twice a week for most of the growing season, monitoring the growth. And we manipulate it by the use of water. And it's just a brilliant invention. And we've trademarked it, but we tell everyone about it. But that meticulous growing and we no one else does it in the world. Like, a lot of people do different ones, but a lot of people look at us and go, oh, it's all too much work. And you're right. They do think, let's just let it, the nature give us what it is. And we have the soil and this is what it brings, but we're totally different. We go against the grain with everything that we do. And it flows from the vineyard through to the winery, same thing, through to our bottling, through to our selling, through to our branding. You've got to have that attention to detail all the way through to make it, you know, to have a great brand.
How much pushback have you gotten from a lot of traditional houses? I'm thinking people in Bordeaux and Burgundy, but not even just there, most of Europe. You know what? We'll say, yeah, all of Europe. I mean, have you gotten any sort of pushback from much more traditionalists out there when you and they try your wine and obviously they like it? Because these are incredibly well-made wines. They're very popular, very high scored. There's a reason why you've been doing this for so long. The proof is in the pudding. But I imagine there has to be some people that, and again, I'm going to use the expression push back, because your way is so different.
Yes. Well, I remember the start of Molly Duca, and we came up with the crazy labels, which I love. But I knew that was going to make a difference at that time, because everyone, so think about it, it's 2005. There were no funky labels. So we were the leader of funky labels in the industry, I believe, because there was nothing. But when I used to go into a wine store and I'd see all the labels and you couldn't tell any difference. They're all like plain and you have to pick it up and try to read what variety. And I thought, there's no way. When I get a chance to do my own wine brand, I'm going to make them colorful and beautiful. So we came up with these lefty labels with all the fun characters about being left-handed. And we got some criticism for sure. Some people were like, oh, your brand's not, people are just not going to take it seriously. They're going to think it's a cheap brand because you've got these whimsical characters on the front. But I stuck with my gut, and immediately when they went into market, people loved it. We won the design awards, and we just kept getting emails and phone calls about, we love your brand, because people can go in and recognize them straight away on a shelf. And then they relate to the characters because, you know, you've got to give people a story now, and that's what makes a difference. That's what they want to hear. So that's what we did, and it worked. And we got a lot of people, even today, you know, little pushback. So when I speak with other producers, which interesting, you know, in Bordeaux or anything like that, they respect what we do, which is great. And it's the same as I respect every winemaker in the world as well, because they want to do it their way. And I often joke and say, do you know what the difference between God and a winemaker is? Have you heard this joke?
I have not.
Okay. Well, God doesn't think he's a winemaker. So, you know, it's taking a bit of piss out of the wine, because, and that's the beauty about winemaking. It's an art form, and every winemaker believes they're doing the best they can, you know. I think that's why I just love drinking wines from around the world, because you'll find some producers that just get it and they understand everything comes together to make the perfect wine.
Of course, no one in Cote Rotie is telling you to take a bottle and give it a shake before you drink it.
That's right. Well, that leads into the other thing. When I say we want to make a difference, we like to shake everybody's head. We like to turn the industry upside down. And we developed this technique because we were using nitrogen gas as an antioxidant. And by chance, we found out that we were using it to protect, you know, not add too many sulfides, but it started to flatten the flavor when we're coming to blend the wine. And we decided to put our hand on it, shake it, and realize that the nitrogen left the wine and the wine just popped with flavor. And so that's where we thought, well, you can't shake it with your hand in a restaurant. So we developed it, the Molly Duca shake out of the bottle. So we get everyone to pour a bit out, shake it, and it makes it just pop. It's like, hey, party time, ready to drink. You don't have to wait for it to open up. You know, it releases that nitrogen and it's a great thing. And a lot of people talk about it. It's our number one thing that people talk about.
Of course, because it's different. 90% or so of wine drinkers can be intimidated, or they're just there for a nice glass, or they're there to celebrate, and they're not into what is the acidity and what's the viticulture and what was the yield and the vine age. They just want a nice glass of wine. And you certainly, like, you straddle both worlds. You put all the time and attention to make great wine and yield management and canopies and all that, but yet you fully embrace the fun side. And there's no insecurity. There's no insecurity with you guys. Like, oh, no, we've got to do it the right serious way so we'll be respected in Chambou Moussigny.
Yeah, exactly. No, we don't do that. And because, you know, I know how hard it is. I'm a winemaker. You know, even me, I look at a wine and sometimes, you know, it's hard to describe, or, you know, people go, what do you think of that? And I know that a lot of people, they just want to have a good time. So we usually use two words when we describe wine, is yum or yuck. And people don't take it too seriously. You enjoy it. We'll do the hard work to make it the best we can. And so that's where the whole fun aspect of Molly Duca comes about. It's just like, hey, just if you like it, you do. Hey, and if you don't, I don't mind, because the world's a big place and there's styles of wines that people do. They might like a Pinot, for example, and we're totally different to a Pinot. But we've found that we've got a winning formula because so many people have drunk our wines and have said, I cannot go back to drinking another Shiraz like that, for example. It's just because they enjoy the goodness and the, you know, just the so much flavor. And they don't want to go back to drinking what they were. And also the wines are very balanced. So the alcohol, acid, tannin do not stick out. And we have fruit.
Totally off topic, because I want to talk about your father, but you mentioned the alcohol. You yes. guys have a Verdejo that's like 16% alcohol, but you don't taste it on the back of the neck. I've drank so much Verdejo. I don't think I've had one that's over 13%. You guys have 16.
Yes. Okay. And, you know, a lot of people have said to us, like, you're just trying to make high alcohol wines. That is the furthest from the truth. We do produce wines with high alcohol, but it's the result of, if you want a lot of flavor in your wine, you have to leave it on the grapevine longer than everyone else. But because of our watering program, we're not letting the sugars increase too much. But we do get very kind of high sugars, and that converts to high alcohol. But it's just a result of trying to get the flavor. And because for example, the violinist, 16% alcohol, but because we've got so much fruit flavors, like, you know, you've got the pineapple, the tropical, the citrus, the lemon, and it's like really viscous, but that fruit sits over the top of the alcohol in the wine. So you don't notice it. Okay. And it's great. You already feel it after you've drunk the bottle.
Yes. By the way, you're right. I did a tasting with a bunch of people. All of us were shocked when we saw the alcohol level. Like, I would have failed that on a blind tasting. Let's go back, Sarah. I'd love to hear more about the influence of your pappy, of your father, on both the winery, but also on you as a winemaker.
Okay. My father I'd have to say, was one of the biggest influences on my life growing up. He was a real role model to me. So he was at the age of 34, became the youngest professor of surgery in Australia. And he used to like leave at 7 o'clock in the morning. He taught me work ethic. 7 o'clock in the morning, come home at 8 o'clock. We'd have dinner with him. He'd go back to study. He'd go to bed 11, rinse and repeat. He was, but at the same time, very successful, but as a really lovely, caring man, right? He was like incredible at his surgery. And I think that's where my charity heart came from. My dad wanted to save lives, but I looked at him and I thought, there is no way I want to cut someone up and do what he worked and worked and worked. But he used to have like visiting surgeons, and this is where my love of wine came. And my dad loved wine. He collected wine. And they used to sit there for hours with all this wine. I was like 10 thinking, why is this so interesting? And they'd swirl it and talk about it. And that's where and he used to always go to wineries. But then when I was about 16, 17, he forced me to do chemistry. He said, if you really want to leave your options open, you need to do chemistry, because then if you don't want to go science or arts, you will at least leave that door open, because every science degree, you have to have chemistry. I hated chemistry, did it. Then I did the chemistry. Then he sat down and had his second plan. He said, Sarah, if I had my life over again, I would not do medicine. I would become a winemaker. He said, there's a course at Rosewood. He knew it all. Hey, here's the course. How about you just apply? So he encouraged me to do it. And I've never looked back, because, you know, I think someone was asking me just the other day, so you've done wine from 17 to now I'm 56. So a lot of people never work out what they're going to do they? They change and chop. And I mean, that's great, but it's obviously I've been able to, you know, we've invented the watering program, and then the very first wine we made won the best wine in the McLaren Vale. So we were on a winning formula, and we've never looked back. So he was the one that got me there. My influence in the winery now. So he died about 10 years ago. And that was just at the point where I acquired the sole ownership of Molly Duca. So Sparky and I founded it, and then we went our own ways. And my dad, who encouraged me, just as the day I got the winery, he passed away 2 days later. It was like he was like, okay, you know, you've got it. I can now rest and go to heaven. So he is very influential.
Let's go there then. What was, obviously you're dealing with the passing of your father. That can't be easy considering how much of an impact he had on your life. What was the first year like when you and Sparky, when you guys split and you took sole ownership? That puts a lot more responsibility on you. What was that first year like?
Yeah, well, talking about my dad dying, he died, and that night, so he'd only just got the winery 2 days, so it was pretty daunting. Then he died, and then that night we had a big growers and Christmas party type thing. And so I had to, but I'm, you know, had to rock up to that, because I don't ever, you know, say, oh, I'm, you know, going to be too upset. But it was hard that night, as you can imagine. And I would say, I remember when I got the business, I was like, holy, holy moly.
You can swear, by the way. Feel free. If you want to swear, you could swear.
Okay, you could tell. I was like, holy crap. It's like, I remember driving and going, Sarah, do you know what you're doing? But I had this faith, right, because I am very determined. I knew that my team, so you got to think, before that it was Spark and I doing everything together, but then you've lost a big part of it. But I knew at that time we had a team that were incredible, because to be successful you have to have a great team, and this is my motto now. I surround myself with people that are better than me. Because I know I've got this skill set, but I know I'm not really detailed. I hate spreadsheets. I blur my eyes at figures, but I'm very creative and I'm passionate about everything I do. So that year, I will say that a lot of people didn't think I was going to be able to run the business. My bank put in, you know, every month I had to have an advisor come in, an advisory board. We never had an advisory board because it was just a family business. We ran it ourselves. So I was forced to have an advisory board. My bankers thought I couldn't do it. After a year, the business had gone so well, they were like, actually, you really impressed us. You know, it's like, A lot of people didn't think I could do it. I knew I could do it, and I knew my team could do it. You know, we just, you know, pulled some grit and got it done.
I imagine you then appreciated a lot more all the awards and fanfare you've gotten since then, since those asshole banks didn't trust you and were, I mean, that's kind of demeaning what they were doing. And then yes. You won the Owner Operator of the Year at the Australian Women in Wine Awards back in 2018. How important was awards and moments like that for you?
At the time, because that was within a year of getting the business. And like for me, I don't put tickets on myself or think I'm like anything special. So it is like I got nominated for it and I won it. And I was like, oh, wow. So I think it just gave me confidence. It's like, hey, Sarah, you know, you're not too bad, you know. But I think it was very important for the team as well. You know, any award that we've had, for example, we are a great award we won a few years later. We won the best business in Australia, South Australia. I also went to the Nationals and got second. But winning that was incredible because that our team, they just get empowered. They're like, hey, we're making wine in the best business in South Australia. So it just gives you confidence, credibility that you're doing the right thing. So much so that I was away for the final interview. I was overseas marketing, selling wine, and the judges came to the company and had to interview some people. And they told me later, they said, it was because when we came to Molly Duca, everyone had the same passion. And that's what people do. When they come and walk around the winery, visitors always say, everyone's just having so much fun. And they look like they're enjoying themselves. And that is one of our agreed behaviors, that number 12, we've got 12 agreed behaviors. One is we have fun. And I want people to do that. Yeah.
By the way, I should have done this earlier. I'm a bad interviewer. I was wondering, on the wine side, McLaren Vale, what do people need to know about your appellation, the climate, what it takes to grow grapes, where your winery is? I realize I probably should have done a geographical question much earlier in this conversation.
Okay. So we're McLaren Vale. It's South Australia. We're on the coast. We're 45 minutes south of Adelaide. It's similar to Napa, Sonoma climate. This is my 30th vintage, just finished here. So I've never ventured out. I did a little bit before, but I went to Japan and Margaret River. That was before I started the Fox Creek, which is my mum and dad's winery. But McLaren Vale is an incredible region. The reason being, we don't get frost. We don't get bushfires because the trees are further away. It's got a lot of sunlight, so you can get color and flavor development. There's a lot of microclimate, so there's a little bit of differences between the different wineries. We've got the beach right there and the capital city there. So it's to me, it's one of the most reliable wine growing regions.
How important are those charities? It's funny, you mentioned obviously influenced by your father. I was wondering if you could just tell the listeners a little bit about the charity work that you do and that the winery does.
Okay. Well, I think it started the birth of helping people through my father, yes. And then I think you can all relate to the We Are the World, that song that came out.
Yep.
With all the great, because I also love music, and that one where all these people, great artists from around, came in to try and help with Live Aid. And that birthed in me, this is what I want to do. I want to build a business to create money to help people. But our journey was difficult. Like, we didn't have much money growing, you know, as a young couple with young kids. And we started Marquis Phillips, which is a brand in the United States. We lost everything, lost millions of dollars, had to restart again. But as soon as Molly Duca came on board and we had enough money, that was where I thought I can really start to help people. So I went and I found about a charity in Cambodia. And what was good is you could actually, instead of like donating wine, money to make, you know, toilets in Africa or something. You can see tangible effects because you're changing kids' lives. So they, what they do is they scoop street kids off the street and they put them in schools and they educate them. So they teach them in English and teach them social skills and coach them in there because the school's there in disrepair. And so they, we've had those kids, 300 kids we started off with from in 2010. Now they're all in university. And we've seen them grow and develop. And now they, because they've been helped, they want to help other people. You know, it's like a sip it forward effect, you know. And that's what, there's another thing we call it, sip it forward program is our charity program. And so whenever someone drinks a bottle of Molly Duca, you're actually sipping it forward. You're helping people because part of our profits go to charities. So that's one big charity that I am very passionate about because you're helping kids. And when we go that, we go there every year, Holly and I do that. That's my daughter mostly. And we can see the change in these people. And now they're going to be doctors, lawyers, whatever, change the future of Cambodia. And then there's also other ones like now my daughter is very strong in more environmental stuff. So biodiversity and saving the rainforest. She actually just went to Takam Rainforest. And they want it, they're going to log an ancient rainforest. And she says, Mom, I'm going to get arrested. You know, they tie themselves on the tree. So she was just telling me last night about it all. You know, she'd gone in and there was a guy that they put a digger hole and they, yeah, I know it sounds extreme, but they're trying to just slow down the logging until the laws can get changed. You know, till the government realizes they should keep doing it and just have plantation wood. Yes. Anyway, so she does that with me. So she's big on that. But we try to help the local community as well with at the Hut Street for the homeless and Mercy Multiplied. So because we sell a lot in the US, so we when Molly Duca started, we were 95% sold in the US, and now we've about 40%. We've opened up different markets, but I wanted to support a US charity just because we were selling in America to help, you know, if you're selling to Americans, you want to help their people as well. But, you know, my goal is just to keep, be profitable and just help find more charities.
That's awesome. My girlfriend, her and her twin sister, they have a nonprofit charity in Africa, in Kenya. I don't know why I'm blanking on the name, and the charity's called Hope for Help. They've built a school, a greenhouse, and you know they've been doing it for coming up to 20 years right now. So I can certainly relate to that. And I imagine you must have been so proud of your daughter. You know, she's like, Mom, I'm getting arrested for being strapped to a tree. I hope she had a half a bottle or a full bottle of Velvet Glove as she's been strapped to that tree.
Well, she actually, it's clever. They didn't have, there was a guy that was, you know, more being strapped, but she was just but it was a good experience. Anyway, she didn't get arrested, which is good. You can go first time offense and you get told to move on, but you're just delaying the trucks to come in and take the logs away.
Yes. Yeah, any little bit helps. By the way, Mombasa, Kenya. I can't believe I forgot the name. Anyway, moving on. What does it mean for you to get to work with your son? Luke is, you know, and anyone who's listening to this pod, go back and find the one with Luke. Just the passion and the innovation and the creativity. You know, certainly I can see where it's coming from. But how cool is that for you?
Amazing. Like, I think everybody that starts their own business would want their kids to take it on. You know, that they would see that, hey, you've created something. I'm really proud of this. So I get to work with I've got two children. I get to work with Holly. She's here every day. I get to hear from Luke every day, even though he's based in America. But I think one of the best things that I ever did is there's two wines in our portfolio, and one is called Blue Eye Boy Shiraz, and it's named after Luke. And then there's the Giggle Pot Cabernet, and it's named after Holly. And they were taken when Holly was 7 and Luke was 10. So they're on the labels. And I designed those, and it's unbelievable. We shipped them to America. This was back in 2007. We were shipping them to America. And our compliance agent said, you can't put kids on labels. Like, you're just going to get it's going to get rejected anyway. We've never been told not to. But the story I'm getting to is that it's given them identity within the business, you know, because Luke's the blue-eyed boy traveling around the globe. Holly's the Gigglepot here, and she runs the customer experience and all the direct sales. Luke runs sales globally. And then I'm as the CEO and the chief winemaker. But it's just a real pleasure because these guys, you know, kids today are way more powerful than the parents. You know, I've tried to give them, stack them everything in their favor, and they're now just dynamic, dynamic people. And for me in the business, I'm not on my own when your kids are in the business. If they weren't here, it'd be like wild bucks. You have to make decisions on your own. So now I include them on all high-level decisions because they're the future of the business, and they're very invested, as you can tell, Luke.
Oh, yeah. It also yes. gives a sense of ownership when they're on the bottle. And by the way, side plug, if you go to anyone in Toronto, Blue Bovine, restaurant and wine bar at Union Station, several Molly Duker wines are there on their menu. So you can try some of these wines. Last question for you, Sarah. I'm wondering, how would you describe yourself as a winemaker in terms of how you make decisions when it comes to blending and things like that? And has it evolved over the years?
I go by gut most of the time. Okay. And I do gut decisions, business decision making. That's the strongest thing that you can listen to. And so with the winemaking now, because I have a senior winemaker been with me for 17 years, and then we have another winemaker. So they do a lot of the grunt work, but I come in. So when I come into the blending room, so I'm still the senior blender, you know, I do that with Peter, and those guys know the wines intimately because they taste them every week, tank tasting, barrel tastings, all that stuff. But I come in and I just see it from a blank. I don't want the background. I don't want to know really what vineyard it comes from. I look at the wine itself. And I'm a winemaker that doesn't go and say, oh, well, that's choc cream and, you know, blackcurrant and list all the things. I go, I like to feel the wine, you know. I like to, what experience does it give you? And that's where we created the term fruit weight, is how much does it actually, you know, fill your palate? How far back does it go? And that's how we grade everything, is the intensity on your tongue. So as a winemaker, I think that you should be emphasizing the fruit, not structure. And I feel a lot of wineries get it the wrong way. You know, they have it flipped upside down. The fruit is small, like cherry, strawberry, raspberry. You don't get the chocolate, plum, licorice, the whole flavor spectrum. They have a short flavor spectrum, and then the structures on the top. And I believe they should flip it around and work out how the heck can they get the most out of the fruit, and then look after the structure. And that's what I do.
I love it. I just love how different it is. This is... Sarah, I really appreciate it. I knew this would be a good interview. When I was talking to Luke halfway in, I made a mental note, find a way to talk to Sarah as well. Listen, congratulations. Congratulations on your gut. Congratulations on your family and the role they play. And I love the fact that part of this is an honor of your father, and just you guys do it your way. You're unapologetic, and you make some pretty damn fantastic wines. You know, the Shirazes, the Cabs, all of that. Crazy high alcohol Verdejo. Thanks so much. Thanks so much, Sarah, for doing the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you. That's fun.
Thanks, everyone, for listening and coming on and checking out the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I think this is the first time I've ever screwed up the end. Anyway, you know how this works. I'm on Apple, iTunes. Check it out wherever you get your podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.